Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. Wager, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter since 1987, and also PWTorch.com, updated every day with live TV, live pay-per-view coverage, special features, special links, video clips, and so much more. Check out every day and bookmark it, PWTorch.com, customized for your laptop, desktop, your tablet, and your smartphone. You can also download our PW Torch app from the iPhone App Store or the Android Google Play Store. It is free and contains tons of daily content also. This is the PW Torch livecast for Thursday, May 21st, 2015, and it is Interview Thursday. And I am very pleased to introduce today's guest Interview Thursday, legendary wrestling announcer, the best I've ever heard, Jim Ross. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here.
Excellent. Jim, a busy week in professional wrestling, so much going on, and I know that there's a lot of excitement right now with last night's NXT TakeOver special with Samoa Joe, I think one of the great wrestlers of this generation, appearing for the first time in a WWE-sponsored show in an official capacity, walking out at the end of the Kevin Owens-Sami Zayn main event in the midst of Kevin Owens beating down Sami Zayn mercilessly. Samoa Joe walking out, kind of giving him an intimidating word of warning. I just kind of want to start with the current event with you, and then we'll shift into some other topics too. What do you think about Samoa Joe and his chances to become a big star in WWE?
Well, it was good booking, good timing. I have a lot of faith in Joe. Joe and I are friends, and he did my Ringside with Jim Ross show as a surprise guest at WrestleMania weekend in San Jose. And we have had an ongoing dialogue pretty regularly since then. And actually, it started on the podcast, on my Ross Report podcast, so we just had a good chemistry, hit it off well. I have a lot of common interests, philosophies, and so forth. So I have a real good rapport with Joe, and it's like anybody else that has a lot of skill. You know, I told him this, and I even tweeted about it, I think. He just needs a jersey. The first thing he needs to do is just get a jersey, get on the team. Once he gets on the team, he's going to be just fine. It's certainly incumbent upon WWE in this particular case, and any promotion for that matter, when they're bringing somebody in to have a plan, have a marketing plan. If you're going to roll out something new on your website, you need to think it through and have a plan. Plan for maintenance, plan for rollout, promotion, marketing, technological issues, whatever the case may be, not regarding this matter today, but, you know, you got to have a plan. So the key thing is that Joe can be a major star in WWE if there is a good game plan in place to utilize his skill set.
I agree with that. I know Joe made a decision many years ago now for to go with TNA during TNA's relatively early stages. And I think, you know, had a good career, had some great matches, had a chance to Kurt Angle, AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels. TNA and Joe parted ways months ago, and he's been working some indie dates and kind of transitioning out of that TNA environment that he got very used to. I always still wonder, though, Jim, what if Joe, around the time that CM Punk had decided to choose WWE developmental, what if Joe had made that choice too? I know I talked to Joe at the time, and he had indicated he was trying to decide between the two options. Do you think Joe would have had a run similar to CM Punk, or do you think back then there would have been things working either more for or more than they are today?
Well, one thing, just so you'll know, you're really breaking up, and I don't know if that's going to affect your recording or not, but I'm hearing about every third word that you're speaking, just as an FYI. I did get the question, I think. It goes back to the same thing. Obviously, the potential to have great matches with CM Punk and Joe were there, their track record, their chemistry. They like working together. They bring out the best in each other. Whether the WWE decision makers would have recognized that or wanted to utilize that remains to be seen. I have no earthly idea. But again, it comes back to the same thing. If there's a plan in place, it would have had a chance to be very good. If there was a plan in place to get them in the ring together with a story behind it, and then the match could unfold and people could see how good that they were together, then obviously any booker, if there is such a thing anymore as a booker, I don't even really know that, but if the decision maker, the guys that are in NXT are doing well in WWE right now, and I look at him as one of those kind of guys. But it all depends on if there's a game plan in place. If there's creative in place to introduce him with an impact like Kevin Owens with John Cena, and then have a maintenance plan to make sure that it's that there's a game plan, there's a strategy.
Yeah.
So that's the simple answer. There's not any issues about does he have better skill sets now than he did then? Oh, he's a little older now than he was then. Most of us are older than we were yesterday. So I think that it's a matter of planning and introduction. It's like rolling out any major company, rolling out any new project or any new product. It's like any film company rolling out a new movie. What's the game plan? How do we get in front of people? How do we get them to buy tickets? So I look at it that way. If there's a game plan and there's a commitment made to the persona, the television persona that the athlete is fulfilling, then of course Joe could be a star. He could have been a star 10 years ago. He could have been a star 5 years ago. He can be a star tomorrow.
How much does being 36 years old when he's stepping foot into the WWE ecosystem work either for or against him based on all of your years there? And when you were in charge of talent development and acquisition during the boom period of the Attitude Era and set WWE up nicely during your years there, would that age have been a plus or a minus? Because obviously you balance the maturity and experience with you're investing in somebody who won't have as many years, perhaps, to make money off of that investment.
Well, ideally, you want to start with a younger guy so you have more years with them. But it still comes down to the skill set, personality, reliability, professionalism, and Joe certainly gets an A grade for all those. So I after a certain point, after a guy comes in and you see he's going to fit in the locker room, he's going to be a team player, and he performs well with people that he's in the ring with of varying skill sets, you stop checking the IDs. You just go to work.
Yeah, yeah. What are your thoughts on Kevin Owens? Obviously, he made a big splash on Monday's Raw. I've heard pretty much nothing. Well, I shouldn't say nothing but positive. A few people who hadn't seen him before responded thinking, well, he's wearing a T-shirt and has a beer gut. How am I going to take this guy seriously as a world-class athlete? And then there's the other 95% who loved him. And obviously, Jim, there have been many top draws over the years who did not have the body of Chris Masters or Randy Orton, just to grab a couple names with, you know, great builds that are more typical of WWE's hires. But I think Bray Wyatt is an example of somebody who's certainly succeeded at a high level where that hasn't been a factor. So in general, not just dwelling on the body type of Kevin Owens, because I think it's a plus. What do you think of what he brings to WWE and what kind of upward potential does he have?
Well, that 5% that you mentioned that talked about how am I supposed to believe in this guy because of his beer gut or his physique really are not nearly as smart regarding the genre as they think they are. And they certainly are not historians. They certainly have not followed the business for very long, and I would suggest they're probably younger and less educated to the business. That's like saying that a 6-foot point guard will never make it in the NBA. Well, we both know that's, you know, if you follow the NBA, check it out. That's not true.
Yeah.
You've had guys that played center in the NBA that win world titles that were 6'7" or 6'8" and not 7 feet. It's just I just don't buy into all that body size stuff. I think you have to be an athlete. You have to be in good shape. You have to have great cardio. I'm a lot more concerned about a guy's personality and his cardio and his aptitude for the business than I am how large his biceps are and things of that nature. If all that comes together and you got a guy's got a great body, that's a bonus. So his body is irrelevant to me. He has an aptitude for the business. He's a student of the game. He likes to be physical, which I enjoy. I don't see through his work. He locks up like a man. I like the athleticism and the physicality that he brings. So he's just got to mesh well in the locker room. He's got to be a good traveler. He's got to be able to adapt to guys that he works with that may not be as good as him or have a different presentation than he does. And he's got to be able to handle some failure, because you're going to have some challenging days in any major company, with WWE not exclusive, but any of them. So how he handles the bumps in the road and those type of things. But as far as bell to bell, he's going to be just fine. Again, is there a plan in place? You know what you're going to do with it. Who's he going to work with? Who's he going to work with the first program? Who's he going to work with the second program? Do you have plans for him for WrestleMania or for Royal Rumble? Those are all things that should be being discussed now about guys that are really good, like Kevin Owens and even Samoa Joe. I'd be talking about Samoa Joe and WrestleMania. It would be in my conversation, at least in the back of my mind, sooner than later, because you can't start planning too early.
Yeah. Yep. Kevin Owens and Samoa Joe, two independent all-stars during their time, Joe, before he went to TNA, and Kevin Owens all along, all these years, is one of the standout talents and standout personalities, and it really is exciting to see Joe and Owens in there. When you add Sami Zayn to the mix, potentially and likely Finn Balor and Hideo Itami, the influx of young talent, and Neville, can't forget Neville too, the influx of young talent that has some experience but doesn't fit the normal conventions such as they are with WWE, I think it's pretty exciting. I think it has to be exciting, and hopefully it is, for Vince McMahon and the writing team to have a lot of new people to work with. Somebody had asked me, and I'm curious for your response to this, does Roman Reigns look at somebody like Kevin Owens walking in as a threat because, man, he has a lot of the intangibles that Roman doesn't have? Roman has a lot of intangibles that Kevin Owens doesn't have. They're both great prospects, but does Roman Reigns look at Kevin Owens, do you think, as somebody who might get in the way of his push or as a great opponent who can help him make money?
Well, I would certainly think that at this stage of the game, and we're not all eight, we're not in the eighth grade here, I would think the latter. It's all about making the money, and the fact that Roman Reigns has been a Division I athlete and has had to compete for positions before should be nothing more than another day in the gym or another day in the ring. It's one would hope that through leadership and mentorship and having the right positive influences surrounding all these talents, that they that was always my goal back in when I was late 1990s and early 2000s, was you want to fill the locker room with guys who want to be your top guy. And it worked out pretty well for that era. The company didn't go bankrupt, and then we were on the verge in the latter part of the mid-90s. We changed the complexion and the attitude in that locker room. We got more athletic. We got guys were working a little bit more snug, and that seemed to work. And the company went from financial issues to a $160 million IPO, so I would suggest that it worked pretty well. So I think the competition is good. I think it's good for everybody. It keeps you honest and keeps you on your toes and it keeps you trying to get better. And the worst thing you can have as a manager is to have a group of athletes or performers or whatever name you want to call them find their comfort zone and be happy to reside in that comfort zone. It's a kiss of death. If your staff doesn't want to do anything any differently than they've been doing it for all these years, or your new guys that are coming aboard don't want to do anything differently than they've been doing prior to coming to work for the Torch, you have problems. So that's called growth. And people that don't want to grow are looking to go the other direction. And I don't want to be around those that want to go the other direction, because that's all negative. So I think I think Reigns is probably going to look at is, you know, bring it on. Let's go make some money.
I hope so too. And that was my answer too. I think it would be a bad sign if Roman Reigns looked at some of that Kevin Owens showing up as anything but a complimentary wrestler, similar in age. I think they're about 2 years apart in age. Kevin Owens a couple years older than Roman. A lot more in-ring experience, but both with great upside. We have an email question from Nelson who says, this is Nelson from the Bronx, New York, a VIP Torch subscriber. Does Jim Ross think we'll eventually see Kevin Owens and Brock Lesnar lock up in the future?
You know, how would anybody know, really? Would it be a, it's a nice fantasy booking. That's a good question for Nelson to ask me on August 22nd in the Gramercy Theater in New York City. That's why
there's a plug.
I do Q&As. Well, the deal is, it's an interesting question, and by then, we may know more about it. But here, the thing is, if I think Brock Lesnar should be and maintain being a babyface. I don't think Brock Lesnar has any business being a heel.
Yeah.
And I'm very firm in that belief. And I think that Kevin Owens has a great future understanding how to be a villain in today's society of wrestling when it's never been harder to be a villain than it is today. I think he kind of gets those challenges. So I would say the chances are better than 50-50 that Kevin Owens and Brock Lesnar their paths cross at some point in time. It seems to be, I don't say it's inevitable, but it's damn sure close to being inevitable that it would be. I would, if I had to say yes or no, I would probably say yes. When? I don't have any idea.
The phone lines are open. I want to open up the phone lines, especially for those who have been on hold for a while during our early technical problems. There are a lot of people on hold. Our phone number is 646-721-9828 if you want to get in line on the phone banks. I want to begin with phone calls with area code 650, and then on deck will be 310. 650, please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Good afternoon, Wade. This is Dante calling from the San Francisco Bay Area. How are you today?
Doing great, Dante. Thanks for calling. What have you got for Jim Ross today?
Appreciate it. Mr. Ross, good to talk to you. Mr. Ross, I was at the Rock Bar the day before WrestleMania, so I salute you on getting the jump on NXT with the Samoa Joe.
Well, thanks.
Now,
pardon me?
I'm going to ask this question. This is a question I wanted to ask you at the Rock Bar. However, I couldn't get close enough to kind of butt my way in and ask. I'd ask you a question that's somewhat related to the past, but also delves into present day. I've been a fan and a watching wrestling since the 60s, grew up out here in the Bay Area. Ray Stevens was the big man out here in the 60s and part of the 70s.
Sure.
Generally, throughout the decades, I generally would regard, if I were to look at the workers of each particular decade, I would suggest that Ray Stevens was the worker of the 60s, Jack Briscoe of the 70s, Ric Flair of the 80s, Shawn Michaels of the 90s. What I'd like to ask you is, who, in your opinion, would be considered the premier worker of the decade of the 2000s? And going forward into this decade, who do you see as a front runner or a good chance of being regarded as the top worker of this decade? Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. I don't know exactly what you're... If you're just talking about in-ring, your list is good as far as just the... There were guys that probably drew more money or as much money as the individuals you mentioned. I would guess that you're basing your criteria on bell-to-bell ring skills, is what I'm assuming. That's by his definition.
That would be correct.
You know, 2000s. I don't know... I don't know who. There's a lot of guys that could be in the 2000s. You know, unfortunately, Austin got banged up, or you know, if it's just on money, then you got to put him on the list. Probably 2000s before he got all banged up was Kurt Angle. Been hard to beat. You know, and I don't know that I think the jury's kind of still out on the 2010 plus or 2010 forward. I'd have to really give it some thought. on the world's worst at giving somebody lists, what's your favorite match? Who's your favorite babyface? Who's your favorite? I'm really bad at that because I contradict myself almost daily.
It
depends
right.
on my mood and all that.
Yeah.
I'm working on a book, and my writing partner wants me to, you know, do the what's your top 10 favorite matches, and I don't know that I'm even going to be able to do that because it just it's like saying what's your favorite kid? You know, you got children, so what's your favorite child? How would you answer that question?
Or what's the favorite meal? What are the top 10 meals you ever ate? You know you've had a lot of good meals.
Sure,
but
yeah.
it depends on your mood. What was the atmosphere? And your memory would be different all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I like your list, Ray and Jack. But you know, there's a lot of arguments could be made. It could have been a funk. I like the Jack Briscoe pick, quite frankly. In the 60s, there'd be guys who would argue in the 60s, you know, it was a better hand. But I know from talking to the talents that Ray Stevens is regarded as one of the best ever. Shawn Michaels, if you said Shawn Michaels in the 90s, I have Shawn Michaels at the top of my list of all time guys. Flair in the 80s, can't argue that one. Unless you go with Hogan, and if it's on work and skill set, then obviously Flair is going to beat Hogan. If you go on money, Hogan's going to beat Flair, or notoriety, or putting the business on the map. So there's so many criteria. It's hard to ever, what is the right answer? You know, is there really a right answer? And I think for those of us that love the business, that's really not a bad thing. Because it can, I know for my shows that I do, and we get into all kinds of discussions in these Q&As we do because I don't ban any questions or censor anybody. A lot of times those favorites are regional favorites. Regionality has a lot to do with who somebody just fell in love with and said, oh, man, this is, if you talk to Wade, it might be somebody from the AWA because that's where he grew up. His influences were from the AWA as a kid. He may have changed since he's gotten older, but I guarantee you there's discussion. The AWA would have representation.
Yeah.
And it should. So I don't know if I got answers for you on all that. I'm trying to give you some background and not blow your question off or disrespect you, but I'd have to really sit down and look at it, and still I don't know if I'm smart enough to figure it out, and tomorrow I may have a different mindset.
It is tough, you know, because I think in the 90s it would have been tough to pinpoint who the best worker of that 10-year period was going to be looking back, because Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Ric Flair still had plenty of good matches coming out of the 80s.
Shawn missed a good part of the 90s, or part of the 90s, from injury.
Yep.
So, and Bret Hart, if you don't include Bret Hart in the conversation, then if those of us, we're not paying attention. Because he obviously was one of the best workers ever. And certainly in the 90s. So I don't know. The hardest questions I have to address are those. I can tell you the most memorable match I recall because I get the same questions every day. And I see the memes of my work on these videos of Foley getting tossed off the Hell in a Cell in 1998. But what's the best match you ever called? You know, heck, I don't know. Honest to God, I don't know. I wish I did know so I could answer that question and we can move on.
Yeah. All right, Dante, appreciate the call. We'll go to 310 next, and then after that, 251 and 602. 310, please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, how's it going? This is Tom from Los Angeles. How's it going? Can you guys
doing
hear me
good.
Right
we can hear you well. Thanks, Tom, for calling.
All right,
what do you got
how's
for
it going? Just a couple things. So, Jim, first of all, a massive fan. It's a fantastic to be able to actually get on a call with you. So you actually mentioned, I believe it was 2001 that the WWE went public. Is that right? Was it 2001 or 2000?
2001, I think.
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah,
so whatever.
Yeah, so I mean, I just kind of think that if you watch over the last, you know, since maybe 1998, I think a lot of people that you'll hear call, they kind of wish that you could go back to the era of 98, 99 and whatnot. But I think now the product isn't necessarily worse. It's just they're giving you so much product, and it's so saturated. And every single week we're seeing a what in the past would have been considered a 4-star, 25-minute match. Then they have a second show, 2 hours, where essentially it's just a rehash of what happened prior. And I think, you know, the main change as a fan from the late 90s until now is that I never want more. I can't remember the last time that a Raw ended where I had to really wish that there was going to be a show on tomorrow so I could tune in. What I'm wondering is with the fact that they have a network, that they have 5 hours of TV every single week, not including Superstars, if that's on still, do you think that there is a way that they can get back to having fans desire to watch this product every single week and be excited about it, given that they have to fill so much time and give away so much stuff? If you were still there, what would you do to bring that excitement back and bring that desire to see what happens next, given all the programming you have to fill?
Well, I've never been fond of the term filling time. I'm not angry at you, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying filling time, okay, is, if that's our theory and that's what your perception is, then somebody's going about their business the wrong way, because any time that you're simply filling time, you're, another way to put that might be you're wasting time. I think that there's a lot of things that WWE could do. I made this point on my podcast the other day about I watched the Roman Reigns special, and I thought it was some of the best work that WWE had done regarding the build of Roman Reigns. And to me, that would have been perfect for being on the WWE on Monday Night Raw in some shape, form, or fashion, whether it's all 30 minutes or it's 15 minutes or whatever the case may be, something like that, like the stuff HBO's done and Showtime has done for boxing, the stuff like UFC does for their big fights. I think that those features are accepted by the public as good television. And so I think those would have a place in there. But if in today's world, I think our expectations for great wrestling shows are lowering and lowering and lowering. And so then we say, oh, this show's a 3-star show. This star got 2 thumbs up or whatever. I think we're compromising a lot in our society. But I think that you've got to tell, your story arcs have got to be longer. I think there's a lot of things you got. You could do things that aren't done. There's no rules to break. There's no time limits. There's no draws. There's rarely a good 2 out of 3 fall match. And you got to remember, well, that's old school. But the audience that they're trying to appeal to, when that stuff was really in vogue, they weren't even born. So it's new to them. So that would be my take on some of that, is use some of the diverse things that they produce on the network as a special features on Raw. I think that the network, having a match where a match starts and ends in a segment, an extra long segment, then you come back for a reset and get me kind of wrapped up. Okay, here's what we just saw, but here's what's still to come. And you come back for a short segment, and then you start over again. It's not a bad thing. I saw the Eagles last night in Oklahoma City, and I've seen them several times. And they have been together 42 years, and they did an entirely different show last night. So they could easily go out and sing Hotel California until the cows come home. And they did sing it, and they sang it very well. But the issue is they changed their show up. This show was different than the last time I saw them, and I admired that. I really, really appreciated and respected their artistry. And I think that changing the format of Raw, for example, is doable and should be evaluated. You can't continue just to start off every show with the 20-minute barrage of talkers. It just gets so predictable, and I think that's why many of us watch Raw on DVR. So there's a lot of things you could do, but you know, I think change is should be in the works. Change, you need to change. You need to freshen things up. Get somebody hot.
That solves a lot of problems, doesn't it? You know, I mean, having a breakout star who can carry a show. But even so, I do wonder, Jim, how because it was By the way, the WWE went public in 1999, so I was off by a couple years. It wasn't 2000 or 2001. But the addition of SmackDown added 2 hours to a boom period for during a boom period for WWE that worked because, as Vince McMahon even told me on the phone when he was talking about implementing a brand split and kind of running the idea by me, you know, Wade, do you think people would watch SmackDown if it was only Raw, the only way you could see Rock, and would they watch Raw if it was the only way to see Steve Austin? And I thought, yeah, I thought that was a good idea because the roster was so deep with stars who could draw ratings, and it was a strategy that Vince thought might work to make both shows must-see shows. The brand split went away several years back now, and now SmackDown feels more like a B-show than ever in the sense that Raw is clearly live and where the big angles happen and where you see more big stars more often. So kind of a two-part question. How do you think the Attitude Era and the boom period for WWE would have been better or worse with the depth of big stars they had if from, let's say, 1996 on, they had a three-hour Raw and a two-hour SmackDown, if that started a few years earlier? And number two, are you in favor of WWE taking a serious look at the brand split to at least make Raw the only 3 hours, the only time during the week that you can see some of those wrestlers rather than also on SmackDown?
First of all, I don't like the three-hour format. I don't like to go to three-hour movies. I think our societal changes of a show, uninterrupted show lasting 3 hours, I think it's proven by the movie theaters, movie studios that spend massive amounts of money doing research and things and look at the running time of the films that are being produced nowadays. You rarely see one that's 180 minutes. So number one, the 3 hour thing is nothing. It's not my cup of tea. That's why I watch Raw more often than not on DVR because I can speed through the commercials. And even the advertisers that are advertising on Raw, you see the same commercial duplicated. And that's a kiss of death for an advertiser. So I don't even understand why the advertisers are being so stupid that they're in the same commercials over and over and over. So the first two or three beats of the commercial, you already tuned them out because you already heard it. So there's that. But I understand money's money. And if USA wants 3 hours, they're going to pay you big money for 3 hours. You give them 3 hours. I'm just saying that first hour could be a little bit different. And they say, oh, we want live event programming. You can give them live event programming, but you can also add some other elements in there that are will fit the bill and help break things up. If the brand split was pure and there was no crossover and it was kept, very staunch that you were not going to see the guys on Raw and then see them again on SmackDown,
stuttering.
A whole different ball game, but that's not how it is. That's not the deal. That's not, and it quit being that not too long after the brand split. It's just so I think there's the problem. The brand split might have worked better if you had been pure. It had been pure, and they had stuck with the brand split. So this is the only time you can see these guys. That's like a Lawler and I were doing Raw, and Cole and Taz. After week one, Lawler did SmackDown for a long time. That should have been thought through as well. It should have been Cole and somebody, Taz or whomever, on SmackDown from day one. That's your team. And never started with me and Lawler and I, because Lawler and I, we didn't have any business doing SmackDown. There was no reason to do it. But we did. I did one show, then it was, I just had too much on my plate. I was hitting 7 days a week back in those days, and it was just a fait accompli that something bad was going to happen, and things bad did happen. So, but you got to, if you're going to do the brand split, you damn sure got to be pure with it, and that's if not, then it's nothing. It doesn't. There's no brand split. That's the only way the brand is split, is that exclusivity. You can't break exclusivity.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And it would that moment after years of discipline of having that exclusivity, the moment that there was a dual brand situation, two stars who had been kept apart cross paths, would have meant a lot more. And the annual draft was exciting, because you got to imagine new matchups that you hadn't seen at all ever, or at least not recently. And when John Cena switched brands, it felt like a big deal. But I think they only got 80% of the way at the best to getting to what it could have meant. And most of the time, you know, you'd give them a four or five out of 10 in terms of how disciplined they were about that brand differentiation. I still think it has a chance. I just don't think they have the confidence right now, Jim, with the depth of star power to fill 3 hours of Raw. I don't think they have confidence in taking enough of those stars away to give SmackDown in 2015 enough star power exclusive from Raw to fill that show.
Well, number one, everybody doesn't share your zeal for the draft. I don't. I didn't. Mm-hmm. As it relates to me, I didn't like it a damn bit. So there's that. Get that out there.
What did you not like about it? The way it was executed, or the entire just the idea of having talent switch brands ever?
Because I was told the night before it wasn't going to happen. And then are you crazy? We're going to break up Madden and Summerall?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That's okay. So that's cool. If they said, hey, look, we're going to move some major names over to, or talent names over to SmackDown. We want you to go. It'll give it more, you know, help credibility or whatever. Then I would have been cool with it. But no one likes being misled.
No.
In life, not just in wrestling.
Yeah.
And it's not okay in wrestling because it's wrestling. It's still a fundamental ill of life to be misled. But I think that if WWE believes that they don't have enough talent, established talent to make Raw viable, they may be right. But at some time, someplace, sometime, you've got to be bold enough to make that move. And then you're going to give some guys the ball that you may think aren't quite ready, but we've got to get them in the game. They got to get some minutes. And I think sometimes that could be a very distinct blessing in disguise. So, you know, but it takes a set of Spaldings to choose to do that and not be worried about the repercussions from your network. Hey, what are you doing? You're seen as no longer on Raw. What's going on? Or whatever. I don't know. I don't know that other than Cena, is there really anybody else that USA would bitch about by not having them on Raw? So you'd leave Cena on Raw, okay?
Yeah.
Take care of your flagship. Now go break it up and see what you got. And then you might be surprised that if guys get more quality minutes and they maximize them, then you might get some guys to get over that you hadn't foresaw getting over, and it would be a good thing. But if you don't go... If you don't have exclusivity, then it's not going to work.
Yeah, it's amazing. Stone Cold Steve Austin wouldn't have happened if, you know, Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage and Kevin Nash and Scott Hall and a healthy Shawn Michaels were still around. Sometimes it's unfortunate or unexpected departures of established stars that just force you to look at the bright side and reevaluate the talent that maybe you weren't looking at as main event talent, and just you get excited, you put all your resources behind it, and sometimes you end up better off. And that Attitude Era is an example. There weren't a lot of WCW Nitro, Jim, was filled with stars from the past. WWF in their boom period was filled with guys largely that you recruited, largely that had not been main eventers before, and it was that fresh influx of stars that made all the difference in the world.
The same thing happened in every territory I ever worked in. It's nothing new. Junkyard Dog became an unlikely top babyface in Mid-South as an African-American under the alleged racism of Bill Watts, which is somewhat ridiculous. Secondly, then when Dog left and went to work for WWF at the time, we elevated Jim Duggan. Jim Duggan had never been a headliner in any territory, ever. He was a good semi-main guy and became a hell of a hand in Mid-South as our top guy. And then he left. And so, the deal is that it's just attrition. Guys would leave territories, go one place to the other. And if you don't let yourself get new and try to keep reinventing and creating new talent, unfortunately, and certainly not speaking ill of the dead, but that was the AWA's problem.
Yeah,
they got old, and they didn't create new stars, and that was the one thing that Vern, God bless his soul, was known for, was creating great new talent.
No, absolutely. And then when he got Hulk Hogan, it, you know, the wheels were just in motion already, you know, for Vince McMahon's expansion and a young, hungry, willing to risk everything, brash man with a plan that you talked about earlier on. You need a plan, a game plan. Vince had it, and he went after a lot of talent, Hulk Hogan among them. And, you know, the AWA just wasn't quite able to, was never able to recover, even with.
Well, they didn't have any backup. They didn't. They quit producing new talent. The fact that people blame McMahon for the death of the territories is really somewhat ignorant. Because being around territories, knowing that you can't continue to do things, and I worked for a very innovative guy that was open-minded to try things, and Bill Watts, but, you know, we weren't developing the new stars as quickly as we should have. We weren't looking and finding and breaking new guys in for the next run. And Watts did it. If Watts was doing it, I can assure you that the guys are older than he. Those old Caucasian alpha males, they weren't doing it either. They just kept retreading their old buddies. Look at Kansas City, you know. Look at Bulldog Bob Brown had about 1 million incarnations and runs, for example. You know, and it's just a good old boy network, and that once viable office disintegrated. But that was just one of many. I'm just using that as an example. So the territories put themselves out of business by and large by not wanting to change the times. I had debates with Fritz Von Erich that arguments, not debates, that you know, radio was the wave of the future and we should use electronic media to promote our events. And his theory was that I didn't know what I was talking about. I never wore a pair of tights. So obviously, because I didn't wear tights, I had no marketing sense. And of course, that's being tongue in cheek. But he said, if they're not watching our show, they're not going to come to our event. And that's an asinine statement. It doesn't make any sense. So, and he's a very bright guy that ended up with a whole lot of money. And so, I mean, so he wasn't a dumb guy. But everything had been done the same old way. And that's why the territories, a lot of them, became vulnerable. And that's why a lot of them didn't survive. And then the national cable overlay took a lot of the exclusivity and the uniqueness and all that the mystique away from what we used to see on your show in Minneapolis or my show out of Tulsa or wherever it was, and that's what we got. Then the cable came in and opened our eyes to a few more things, and then it just got out of control and the uniqueness started eroding, and there was nothing new in the territories. There's no new stars. And then the guys, because all the old guys from the territories, the newer guys that were on national cable, they were the hip new thing, and the old guys were, you know, I've seen these guys already. So it was an interesting thing, and now that's we're there again, because now you don't have syndication that's only existing in essentially Sinclair with Ring of Honor, and to keep cable healthy and happy, you're only going to do it one way: continue to develop new stars. And if you don't do that, then sooner than later, anybody that's on cable doing wrestling, I don't care who you are, if you don't have new, you're getting ready to, you're going to downtrend. It's inevitable.
Yeah. And that's one thing I wanted to talk to you about, and this is a good time to enter into it. John Cena is impressing me so much the last couple of years, Jim, especially lately, this U.S. title open challenge, using his star power to give a rub by going head-to-head, face-to-face, sometimes wrestling, sometimes talking, more talking Monday, more wrestling with Neville and Sami Zayn. John Cena, with his stature, is cementing, he's adding to his reputation, I'll put it that way, on the good side of the ledger, which is considerable to begin with, that he is wanting, while he still has tremendous drawing power, to give back and help create new stars. Not, you know it, Jim, not every top star has been as willing and generous as John Cena has the last year or so, going back to Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania last year, to say, let's use my star power and my foundation and my standing to help give a rub and escalate and accelerate some of these guys becoming top stars. I thought the way that he let Kevin Owens talk to him on Monday impress me. Not a lot of top stars over the years would have let a new guy show up, quote-unquote new guy, show up and talk to John like that and not have complained afterwards or bitched and moaned about it afterwards. Your thoughts on John Cena and specifically what I'm talking about here, the willingness as an established top star to really be in there with guys who, quote, have never drawn a dime, as other main eventers might have said, as a way to talk themselves out of creating a whole new group of new stars.
Well, I'm simply not surprised. It's because of societal issues and guys that are holding on to the spots on top with a clenched hand of death. Cena has always been a team player. We have never had anybody that I signed that had a more team-oriented outlook than John. And I don't think WWE's ever had anybody. And that, I was only around WWE for 21 years, so since my time around them, we never had anybody that worked harder than John Cena, doing all the things that he does. And I'm not just talking about the Make-A-Wish stuff, all the things that aren't publicized and taking pictures and signing this and doing things for marketing and things for WWE Shop and all these other things that he does. I'm not surprised. And that's the attitude that you want to foster. That's the attitude that you want to teach at NXT. That's exactly the attitude that I saw when I interviewed him for the first time in Southern California when he's working for Rick Bassman. And I flew on a red eye back to New York and took a car to the office in Stamford where my car was. And I got there probably around 10 or so. And I went in to see Vince, and I said, I got agreement to sign a kid last night that I really believe will be in a WrestleMania main event in 5 years. And I think Vince thought I was either sleep-deprived or hallucinating or something, because I had never really made that bold a statement. I felt that confident that John Cena was exactly what we needed to build around. Character, being a fan, having great aptitude, he looked great. I had checked on him before I got to L.A. with his college coaches. One of them happens to be the assistant head strength coach at Oklahoma University, so I had a pretty good end there. He was his coach at Springfield College. So I had checked the background of him. I recruited him, or I did just like you would. I did a lot of guys. I checked a lot of people out that, like you would for the NFL Combine. What kind of character does this guy have? You know, so it doesn't surprise me, but that's where everybody, hopefully, the guys in the locker room will learn from watching what John's doing, and they'll share in that. Yeah. And the way that I would address that, and it may sound bold, and I'm older, and I'm grumpy, and this doesn't work anymore, and you can't manage talent this way. You try to reason with talent that this is why you should do it. This is why it's important for the team. This is why it's important for you. If the goose that's laying the golden egg is ill, do you really fully expect that your eggs are going to continue to be provided? Those golden eggs are going to continue to be yours? Of course not. Don't be an idiot. The goose is sick. So if you're not drawing, your money's going to go down. So, and if guys can't see that and they don't want to play by those rules that Cena is illustrating, then you need to do all you can to eliminate the problem and get them out of that role so you put somebody else in that does share the same unselfish theory. And I saw a lot of guys in my career that would have matches, and sometimes the bookers would say, my God, you gave this guy too much. And that was just the guy being nice and trying to give his opponent a little bit more maybe than he should have, so that when he beat him, he beat somebody. So Cena's making future opponents for the rest of the guys and helping keep the company healthier or make it healthier. So I'm not surprised. That's just his attitude. His work ethic and his integrity are absolutely pristine in that regard. Hey, is he as talented in the ring as Shawn Michaels and Jack Briscoe, like the earlier caller, Ray Stevens? No, he's not. He'll tell you the same thing. But boy, he's got a great attitude and he has great passion. And I'll take a trade out there, you know, than the guy that's just the 5 or 6 tool guy that can do it all. I'll take a trade out every now and then on that with a with John Cena, who's connected with the audience, and he's been loyal, and he's durable. Boy, he's going to be hard to replace someday. People are not going to realize it until he's gone.
Yeah. Well, he's setting a good example for so many guys, and that is a good thing. And, you know, I mean, he's had a checkered fan response. It took him a long time to earn respect. He came in after an Attitude Era, after an Olympic gold medalist who was one of the greatest, quickest world-class wrestlers. I mean, in terms of the turnaround time of Kurt Angle becoming great, is short of a turnaround as anybody, and, you know, came up around the time Brock Lesnar did. He just, it was really tough for him, and he had a kind of a, you know, goofy gimmick at the beginning that didn't work with everybody. Just a lot of things were working against him.
The goofy gimmick wasn't his fault. That's what he was given. Yes, that's like saying he's number 99. Well,
yeah.
You know, the club gave him 99. He didn't ask for 99. That was a gimmick that he was given. He just wanted to get, like I said about Joe, I wrote this about Joe. I even told Joe this in my podcast. I told Joe this on the phone not that long ago. Just get a jersey, buddy. Just get a jersey. You get on the team, you're going to be fine. And of course, he got his jersey last night, and he's done. He's going to be fine going forward, I think. But you know, John's done everything he's been asked to do, and he's got a certain style, and you know, I'm not trying to talk anybody into cheering for him. You should cheer or boo whoever the hell you want, but I think a lot of the boos that Cena gets is simply because a defiant younger male demographic feels like it's fashionable or it's trendy. Yeah. I don't know that they really hate him. I think sometimes it's just the fact that it sounds cool. And I'm just glad, you know, that he's still selling tickets, and he still sells merchandise, and he's still the go-to guy. He's still the biggest star in WWE. And will be for the foreseeable future until somebody proves that they can take that spot. And, hey, and I guarantee you, John Cena is going to be all for that. He's not going to hold on to it like some of the old-timers we've known with every ounce of his being. You know, he'll be ready to pass the torch when somebody is ready to take it from him, to receive it and run with it.
Yep, very good. If you're just joining us, Jim Ross is my guest today on the PW Torch Livecast at pwtorchlivecast.com. We are on 5 days a week live for 5.5 years. We have not missed a single weekday of being live on the air, and we welcome you to continue joining us live tomorrow at 7 o'clock Eastern. And Bruce Mitchell, Torch senior columnist, is joined by the host of the East Coast Cast, Travis Bryant. Travis's show is available at eastcoastcast.com. And we welcome you and invite you to check out that program also here at Blog Talk Radio. And Saturday night, after a big UFC show with some real star power on Saturday night, Todd Martin, who has recently joined the Torch staff, will be joining Jamie Pennick, editor-in-chief of MMATorch.com, for a post-UFC live program. That is available at blogtalkradio.com/MMATorch. Or you can find the link at our sister website that covers UFC and the whole MMA world full-time at MMATorch.com. That website is customized for your laptop, desktop, tablet, or smartphone. Check it out. Bookmark it. It is updated every day. Full-time editor Jamie Pennick on top of all the news stories with analysis to put it in perspective. Unlike a lot of places where you get the news, Jamie Pennick adds his analysis. Great columnists, great features, and unmatched live pay-per-view event coverage at MMATorch.com, and then the post-game show live Saturday night with new Torch staffer Todd Martin. Todd was with me for nearly 2 hours yesterday for an exclusive VIP show that he is doing once a week with me, The Fix with Todd Martin. Rave reviews on Twitter for that already. If you're a VIP member, check it out. If you're not, it's a good time to go VIP and check out Todd Martin, added to the staff. You can sign up at pwtorch.com/GoVIP. My Twitter is at TheWadeKeller, and the brand Twitter, our brand is on Twitter at PWTorch. We hope you'll follow us again. That's at TheWadeKeller and at PWTorch. Our guest again today, Jim Ross. Jim, what have you got coming up? You can plug your Twitter, obviously plug your very successful Podcast One show, and talk about some upcoming personal appearances that you've got that people might be interested in.
Well, I'm staying busy for a retired guy. My retirement has been greatly exaggerated, or so I'm reminded every day by my significant other. My podcast drops every Tuesday night at 9 o'clock on Podcast One and iTunes. This week I have Mark Madden, who you're no stranger to. Mark and I talk about.
I made him what he is, and he will tell you that.
Yeah, you did, no doubt.
Former Spurs and Torch columnist in the 90s.
Bruce Mitchell, who he is, too. He just doesn't know what he is. You made him what he is. He's just not sure what that is. That's another issue for another time.
Take all the time you want to bash Bruce. I'm all for that.
Bruce is a good guy.
Yeah.
Been around a long time. And
almost as long as you.
I like Bruce. Yeah, well, you know, I'm getting up there. I'm becoming a... one of the elder statesmen now my genre. I'm doing my podcast is on every comes on. I do one a week. I'm not like some of these guys who do multiple. I do one a week, and I'm happy with that. And I am it drops every Tuesday night at 9 Eastern on Podcast One and iTunes. You can actually also get it on my website at jrbarbecue.com. Which is kind of a cool deal. I do blogs. I don't promote my website as much as I should. I think a lot of people don't even know I have one. I do a lot of stuff I can't do in 140 characters on Twitter, at JRSBBQ. I blog about things. I'm going to blog some tonight about, I'm going to write a new blog today, a little bit later today, about Samoa Joe and NXT and what NXT means to the future of WWE and how it's going to work better and things of that nature. I'll probably write a little bit about TNA and all the stuff that's going on about them. And then I've got some appearances coming up. I'm going to the UK with a cool cast of folks. HBK, Bret Hart, Trish, Lita, I think Ron Simmons, Howard Finkel, a bunch of WWE Hall of Famers, Demolition, Nasty Boys, myself, Justin Roberts is going to be part of the first ever London WrestleCon. It's going to be in London on Saturday, the June 20th, and Sunday the 21st. And then Shawn Michaels and I then will go over to Manchester on Monday the 22nd, and we'll do a two-man show, basically a enhanced Q&A at the Manchester Comedy Store. All those events really are selling well, and to the point that I know they're cutting off online sales on June 1, so everything is close to being sold out. So if you're listening and you're in that part of the world, you're going to be around, I wouldn't procrastinate a lot longer on getting tickets. Should be a hell of a really, really cool weekend in London. And then that two-night, I know in Manchester there's only a handful of tickets left for Sean and I. We've never done a show together, so it should be fun. Then I'm going to be a part of the New England Fan Fest. I rarely do a fan fest, and I don't do WrestleCons very often. I don't think that's the one in London will be the first one. So I'm going to Rhode Island, Providence, on the last weekend in June to the New England Fan Fest. And that they got a web, New England Fan Fest 5.com. No, it's NewEnglandFanFest.com. They got a hell of a roster. I don't know where, you forget about how many guys are out there. And when people say, well, you don't get any guests on your show for your podcast from WWE, all you got to do is look at all these guys going to like the New England Fan Fest. There's tons of talent that don't work for WWE that are great podcast guests. And I enjoy doing that. I enjoy talking to a variety of individuals. So I got that rolling. I'm going, my tickets tomorrow are going to sell on Friday, tomorrow morning at the DC Improv. DCImprov.com or the box office for my show on Wednesday, August 19th in there. That's kind of cool. I've never played the DC Improv in this famous room. So I'm going to play that on the Wednesday night of SummerSlam week, and then I'm going to take the train. I'm kind of excited about the train ride as much as anything else, up from D.C. to New York, do some media on Thursday and Friday, and then on Saturday, the Saturday before SummerSlam, I'm doing my show at the Gramercy Theater, and tickets for that are on sale at Ticketmaster. So I don't think I can shill too much more. I'm staying busy. I just got I got 197 pages of my book. I'm trying to go over and edit, which I hate doing. I may never release it. I can't get happy with it. I don't want to say this about this guy. I don't want to say this about that guy. I want to take this out. I use this adjective too many times. I'm anal. I feel like Forrest Gump taking his kid to the school bus stop, and I don't want to let go of his hand, let him get on the bus and go to school. I don't want to give my book to the publisher. It's still a work in progress, but it will be out of 2016, whether I like it or not, because I'd like to print it before, you know. I want to be able to remember what I wrote. It gets so damn old, I can't remember. So that's been a labor of love, and it's just hard to write about yourself. And remember dates. I'm a pain in the ass when it comes to accuracy on dates and things, and I don't like to. So my writing partner is a lawyer, so we're good there. He's really good at fact checking and legal stuff, and so I'm working on that. You know, that book will actually end at WrestleMania 15, or 14. 14. 14 is where Austin beat Shawn. I think 14 is where I said the Austin era has begun or something like that. And
yeah,
that I was just coming back from a second bout of Bell's palsy, and I really thought my career was over. I really did. And I, got a reprieve and got several more years out of it. So on TV. So it's going to end there with a happy ending. And then it gives me everything else from all the Attitude Era, the Monday Night Wars, another bout of Bell's palsy, getting drafted to SmackDown, all the craziness that went on during those Monday Night Wars, acquiring the WCW brand. It gives me a ton of good stuff to write about in that second book. So, and we're actually doing two at once. We're talking about everything, and then he's cataloging it. And so it's I'm my job this weekend. Is if I can dodge the tornadoes and the rainstorms is to stay indoors and work on my book. And but I'm having a blast in these one-man shows. I want to play Minneapolis, and there's a lot of those old wrestling hubs like Charlotte. I love to play Charlotte. I want to play Tampa. I want to play Houston. I want to play Dallas. And we're already working on WrestleMania 32 to do several things there in Dallas, of our own promotion for that weekend. So it's good. I'm having fun. I swore when I left, when I got relieved of my post in WWE, that that I would have fun doing.
Yeah.
And it's nice to be able to, you know, thanks to Vince McMahon and thanks to the company going public, quite honestly, just honest truth, I can afford to do that.
Yeah,
and we've always lived within our means. I've practiced what I've preached to my talent roster, and pay your taxes and don't spend more than you make, and pay off your house and get debt free and do all those things. Be smart, and some did that. And somebody asked me the other day, it's an interesting question in Baltimore, and I never thought of it this way. He said, "What will be your biggest legacy in wrestling?" I said, "Heck, I don't know. I'm sure it's probably going to be the announcing, because that was what was most public." He said, "Well, I would like to disagree with you." And I said, "Well, you're writing a story. You can if you want." He said, I think your biggest legacy is going to be the talent you hired and when you hired him and what it meant to the company." I said, "Well, I never really thought of it that way, but it makes an interesting story. But you write whatever you choose. But I think publicly, to the public, it's going to be the announcing. And with the WWE Network, I get tweets from people say, "Hey, JR, I watched a show you did the other day as 1989 or Great American Bash or something, or War Games or whatever. And I didn't know you'd announced before WWE. And I said, "Yeah, 19 years ago."
Wow.
I was an overnight sensation. It took me 19 years to get to the bigs, as they say. But, it's just the network has reinvented a lot of guys. And for the other thing, I don't know if people look at it this way, but when you're talking to guys that are down their luck, and I talk to a lot of guys, and sometimes you have to loan somebody, you give somebody a little money, or you loan them some money, the network is keeping presence, a relevancy to some older talents that need to make those card shows, make that 1500 or $2,000 to go. You know, they want to be like, you know, Randy the Ram and set the card table by themselves. But they're getting the opportunity to go out and do things and pick up paydays and have some self-worth, feel like they still have some viability. And I think that's really good. And I think the network has helped facilitate a lot of that.
Very good. Thank you, Jim, for all of that update on what you're doing. Very busy schedule. We look forward to your book. And I know we've had really nice reviews from people who have attended your Q&As in person. And it's a pretty cool experience. And I think people should take advantage of it because, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that you want to miss a great Ring of Honor show if it comes to your area or if WrestleMania comes to your town. But you can always go see another good wrestling show and have a good memory from that. But getting to be in person with you, maybe asking your own question, but certainly hearing you in just a more casual setting, but in person, talk about the business with all the places you've been. And I know every show is different. If it comes to your market, it's one of those things that in 5-10 years, I doubt you'll still be doing the Q&A tour. Maybe you will, Jim, but I don't think people should assume that and make an effort to go see it because I think it's a different kind of memory.
I saw Don Rickles on Letterman a few days ago because I watched all these last Letterman shows because I was always a big Dave fan. Johnny Carson and David Letterman were the kings of late-night television, and all due respect to the Jay Leno-ites of the world, not knocking Jay, but Carson and Letterman were, you know, they were my guys. They were ones I really thought they were really good. So I saw Don Rickles on there, and he was on there the same night with Howard Stern, and that was an interesting duo. And it was the first time that I ever saw another guest set out with Howard came on first and stayed while Don Rickles took the chair by Dave. And I think it was just to kind of help Don get through the segment. Because I don't know how old he is. He's got to be, you know, upper 80s, 90. Hell, I don't know. But he's still got his wit, by and large. So I don't know that I'll be doing as long as Don Rickles. God willing, I'll be alive and somewhat coherent. But I'm really having a blast doing it. And here's what I'm finding. I'm finding that it's a challenge to master these skills of being of doing these shows, doing this speaking stuff. I'm not a stand-up comedian by any stretch. I'd like to think I'm maybe a humorist. I'm a storyteller, a philosopher, like a little motivational stuff. You know, fat, chubby guys, I mean, that's oxymoron. Maybe I'm being duplicitous. But chubby guys with an Oklahoma accent with three bouts of Bell's palsy really aren't supposed to be successful on television. And somehow or another, I was able to do that. And I think largely because I love the business and refuse to not love it. There were times in the wrestling business when I had plenty of reason to not like it.
Yeah.
And there were times that it tried to push me away, and I refused to let it. And so I always loved the business, still do. And I love interacting with the fans. And to be honest with you, I'm a ham. I love performing.
Yeah.
You know, just cut to the chase. It's just a different way of performing. And you're right. You're astute. People do see me in a different light. And they see me, well, I didn't ever realize, you know, you had a sense of humor. Or you were always the straight man. Lawler always, or Heyman, or whomever. Terry Funk, Cornette, or whomever, you know. All those guys I worked with. So, you know, you kind of acquire a sense of humor, and you just don't get a chance to. I wasn't casting that role at that time. Sometimes I'd fire off something that was you get a chuckle out of, but I have a blast doing these shows, and we're going to do more of them. You know, I got a good management team, and you'll find this funny. This trio. My manager in New York, or my agent in New York. I got a manager. My manager's in L.A. Barry Bloom, the famous wrestling manager.
Yep, known him forever.
Not as famous as Jim Cornette and Paul Heyman and Jimmy Hart. Not that kind of manager.
But one of the more influential people of the last of the 90s and after. But he is one of those people who had a lot more to do with the course of the wrestling industry than almost anybody except the most astute students of history understand.
I agree. And he didn't take any bumps.
Yeah.
But my agent in New York represents three people on these speaking tours primarily. and I'm part of the speaking division of the talent group, the agency group is what it's called, the agency group. And his three clients, biggest his three clients he uses most are Bill Nye, the science guy, Mick Fleetwood, and me.
Wow.
Now, that's diversity.
Yes.
You know, Bill Nye does things I can't even spell. Mick Fleetwood, of course, the founder of Fleetwood Mac, the drummer, is a different cat. And then the chubby Southern accent of Bell's Palsy guy with the wrestling dude. I love that part. Aren't you the wrestling dude? Young kid. And the other older guys, their dad's like, son, he's the wrestling guy. Okay, so I'm either the wrestling guy or the younger guy's on the wrestling dude. So it's either way, it's all been a good ride, and it's been fun, man. I'm having a blast doing it. I'm really having fun. And for us to draw a good house in Baltimore, in downtown Baltimore, after all the racial issues that they had, was really a testament to the folks being so loyal. And that's an example of why wrestling fans, and look, you've made a living in wrestling in a very unique way. It's the only job you ever had, right?
Oh, yeah.
You never had another, really a...
I worked at 7-Eleven when I was a teenager. Yeah.
All right. But you know what I mean. It's
no, I know what you mean. Career-wise, yeah, this has been...
Your only full-time job you've ever had.
Yes.
I think that's a beautiful story. That's the American dream. You lived your dream. You created a plan. You made it happen. You're an entrepreneur in a very unique genre. And I have never, ever shied away from being the wrestling guy. I have fun telling all those stories. And I got to live through some crazy times, man. 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, territories, corporate ownership, private companies, public companies, pay-per-view coming of age, satellite TV coming to the forefront, cable overlay. Every syndicated TV is all. I was lucky. I got to live through all that good stuff.
Who was it that said? May we live in it. May you live in interesting times. As far as the wrestling industry goes, I mean, you've been there. I mean, for so many different phases, and you know, it's going to take a little longer to kind of break down all the chapters and how they fall in history and how they're framed. But you were part of the territory days. You were part of the expansion period. You were part of the down period before the Monday Night Wars, and then you were part of what happened in the consolidation to WWE being the dominant U.S. brand after the boom period, the Attitude Era, the Monday Night War, and now you're writing your own whole new chapter after that. It's pretty amazing the journey you've been on, and that's why your book is going to be highly, highly anticipated. Jim, do you have time to take a few more phone calls from people who have been on hold a while here?
Sure. Yeah, I do. Donald Sutherland said that line.
Oh, okay.
Donald Sutherland said that line, may we live in interesting times, in the movie where Demi Moore tried to molest Michael Douglas about the company going public. No, it's a great movie.
Yeah,
I just can't think of the name of the movie, but it's set in like a Silicon Valley type thing. And then she sued Michael Douglas for sexual discrimination. And it's one of the best movies it's one of the great movies, but Donald Sutherland at the end, when the story started at its peak, he said, may we all live in interesting times or something to that effect. So it was a great movie. It was a good line
that
he pulled out of the air there. So, yeah, I can go a little bit longer.
All right. Well, let's go to the phone line. So if you're on hold, hold tight. We're going back to the phone lines. I do want to note quickly that I am on the Steve Austin Unleashed show today. That dropped today, discussing Payback and a little bit on Raw on Monday as a follow-up to Payback. And it was my first time on the Unleashed version of the Steve Austin show, but I have been on either one or the other doing a wrap-up with Steve, a conversation with Steve, about WWE pay-per-views a number of months in a row now, and we plan to do it again in a couple weeks. So hope you'll check that out also at Podcast One, along with Jim Ross's podcast. I did want to know, too, sometimes, Jim, I know it's hard for people to remember the URL of your website. I did test it on Google, and if you type Jim Ross blog, It's right at the top there. So if people just Google Jim Ross blog, it'll take them to your website. I know you put a lot of work into it, and you really do a lot of writing, a lot more than you can put on Twitter, as you said, and definitely recommend that. It's always good to hear what you have to say about things, including this debacle of a PR spin by TNA today, reacting to the Wrestling Observer report that Destination America has marked them down for cancellation this fall. And there's a lot, you know, a lot of nuances to the story that aren't getting out there unless you actually read the actual story. And TNA issuing a very strange non-denial lawsuit threat today that has a lot of people kind of trying to make sense of it and scratching their heads. So
I don't know what to make of that. You can easily say where there's smoke, there's fire, but you don't put a show and hype it and put it in prime time. Friday night was never a good night.
No.
Nobody wants to be on Friday nights. It makes a lot of sense not to be there. Wednesday long haul might be a better deal, but it's just strange to me that they're moving it around so early in the game. And I hope that they don't cancel it. I hope the TNA stays in business.
Yeah.
A lot of good people there work there that need jobs. But I am I'm leery. I'm fearful that the worst may happen in September. I'm fearful of it. And hope that I'm wrong.
What I think would be nice is if Destination America and TNA, for their mutual own good, would come to put together a statement that didn't deny what a reporter had reported that was accurate, because that's BS. You don't call somebody, you don't say somebody was inaccurate if they're right. But it doesn't mean you have to confirm it if you don't want to. But come out with a statement that says TNA is moving to Wednesday nights starting next week, and we are committed to doing what we can to grow the audience, and we hope for a long mutual relationship between these two partners.
Yeah.
Something like that would be, it wouldn't deny that they're not penciled in for cancellation in the fall, but the initial Observer report outright said they were marked for cancellation, and then the decision was made to move them to Wednesday, and that cancellation may have been withdrawn. It may be tentative. It may not be there. That's my interpretation of what I've been able to dig up. And I just think it'd be good for Destination America and TNA to get on the same page and put out a coherent statement that wasn't threatening to sue people over, without naming who they are or what they said, because there wasn't one thing in the Observer report that attributed any statement to a TNA official or a Destination America official, and yet TNA's statement is saying that people are attributing statements to TNA and Destination America that were never said. So they can't be talking about the Observer report if you actually read the Observer report and then also their statement. So it's just a mess. You know, and they're going to be together for 4 more months. So come together and make the best of it?
The network needs to step up and say something.
Yeah, I agree.
And of course, TNA's got to put some fires out, and their talents are probably wondering what the hell's going on. And
yeah,
the well-publicized issues of slow pay and being in arrears to some of their production people and talents, et cetera, et cetera. You know, is what it is. This doesn't help things. It just helps the instability. So it's a tough thing. You're right. The next word needs to come from Destination America.
Yep.
You know, they should either they got to say something, and that's why I believe I'm fearful of the worst.
Right.
Because of their silence.
And if they're really upset with TNA, then I can understand their being silent and not wanting to show any support for the brand. If there's something behind the scenes that we don't know about, then fine. But if there isn't, then they should come out and show some support for TNA. If for nothing else, just say we look forward to growing this summer. And we look forward to doing what we can to improve the awareness of TNA this summer. And leave it at that. And at least you're not lying in saying somebody's wrong who put out a good, accurate story, even if they didn't like that story, because that's BS. But yeah, the silence is ominous, and it makes everybody look bad right now. Anyway, Jim, let's go to phone lines because I know your time is limited.
I got about 10 minutes.
Yep. So let's do some rapid fire with our callers. Hit us up with one or two short questions, and Jim will hit you up with one or two short answers, and we'll try to get to a handful of calls here. Beginning next with area code 602. 602, thank you for holding so long. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hi, this is Marco Biabit, member from Phoenix, Arizona. How's it going, guys?
Oh, we're doing great. Thanks for calling. What do we got for Jim?
All right, so we're going to limit time. I was watching the TakeOver special yesterday from NXT and seeing all the crop of the new people we're getting in there. Is this kind of, you know, the indies turning into kind of the territories in an essence where you can see now quality people that actually, you know their craft perform at a higher rate than we've been seeing from developmental before? What's your opinion on that, guys? Thank you.
Well, obviously, if you've got 5 or 6 years or more experience, like a lot of the guys, William Regal, Darren Matthews, King, at King Regal, at Real King Regal on Twitter, he's done an amazing job of finding, interviewing, watching work, evaluating talent. He's one of the unsung heroes in NXT. And so he's looking at some of these guys that have had experience, and you can't replicate the experience of working before a live paying audience. But at the same time, I'm still going to have Jerry Briscoe out there recruiting Division I athletes. I'm going to be looking for D1 or NAI college athletes. I'm still going to look for those guys. So you go wherever there's talent. That's a trail you follow. So. But right now, they're picking the low hanging, nice ripe fruit, to bring into the system, and Samoa Joe's wrestled what, way over 10 years,
yeah.
So it's a unique deal. But there's not a lot of Samoa. Where are there any more Samoa Joe's out there? You know, I don't know about that. But it's a different place and time. But you still got to get the guys new and fresh. And then the advantage you have, they can be around a Samoa Joe. They can be around a Kevin Owens. They can be around a Sami Zayn. They can relate to some of those younger guys that have been wrestling since they were teenagers and help them learn and acquire the skill set. So It's a good situation. You need to keep doing both, quite frankly.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. Joe's been wrestling since 99, very late 1999. But he's been around basically as long as PWTorch.com as a website has been around, and going back to not too far after Jesse Ventura was special guest referee at SummerSlam, just to kind of put it in timeline perspective, he's experienced, and there's not a lot of guys with that level of experience. But like you said earlier in the show, if you're WWE, you want to get guys with Joe's talent a little bit younger, ideally. But Joe made that choice, and he made a good living working a lighter schedule, and he's got some legs still because he didn't work a grinding full-time schedule, even at age 36.
He's a great get.
I agree.
Great get, and he's a main event guy waiting to happen, and I'm very, very pleased that he's there. And I don't know what the deal is. I don't care what the deal is. Hey, look, they're making T-shirts, and they're selling out T-shirts, and he's getting prime slot on NXT on their two-hour special. Don't think they don't have some sort of deal. Anybody thinks they don't have a deal is ignorant. Come on.
Yes. All right, up next, area code 773. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
This is Boris from Chicago.
Hey, Boris. Real quick, what have you got for Jim?
Would he, if he was booking, would he book the women, Charlotte, Becky Lynch, and Sasha Banks, and them, would he book them before Triple H take the helm, if possible, or I'm trying to say, would he book them on Raw? Would this man still in control right now, or waiting until Triple H is in full control of Raw?
I get the gist of what you're saying.
Anybody's going to only be able to do there what Vince wants.
Yeah.
If Vince is not going to agree with Triple H's vision of the women's division as it is currently structured in NXT, don't expect that that's what's going to, you're going to see day one in WWE. There's still one boss in that company. But I will say that thanks to Ronda Rousey, and people don't think the Rousey factor hasn't been an impact here, is not paying attention. Thanks to Ronda Rousey and what she's done for Dana White and USC, we know that people like women's physicality. I'm a season ticket holder of OU women's basketball. I love to go watch OU women's softball team play. I know a lot of people like tag team wrestling, not to digress from women, but people like different things. I like to watch good athletic women participate in athletics. I like to watch good tag team wrestling. And so in both of those areas are areas of deficiency on the main rosters of WWE. And I understand they're trying to correct it, and I understand they're trying to get better, and I applaud them for that. But to say that the tag team division and the women's division is red hot would be a misnomer. Will it change? Hopefully it will. It will change if Vince checks off on it and says, okay, let's try it your way.
Very good. And you can't wait around. I'll add this too. You can't wait around for Vince to hand things off to Triple H if you want to see Charlotte, Becky Lynch, and Sasha Banks on the main roster. You can't time things out like that. I mean, obviously the way that NXT portrays the women and the time that they give them is great. I hope Stephanie and Hunter are able to talk Vince into giving them a little bit more control over making sure that they don't just have models wrestling in the Divas division on Raw, but they have role models, the way that Stephanie talked about Ronda Rousey, frankly, being a role model for her daughters. And I think we're moving in that direction, Jim. I really am optimistic that
they're moving in that direction. It's just a matter of people got to be patient and not have to work. I got to have a timeline. No, you don't have to have a timeline. We're moving in that direction. Be happy of that, and then it will happen in due course. But they're moving in the right direction is the key term.
Absolutely. Thank you, Boris, for the call. Let's go to air code 609, and by the way, 718 on deck. 609, please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, this is Sean from New Jersey.
Hey, Sean, thanks for calling. What do we got for Jim?
Hey, what's up, Jim? I just have two questions. One, I thought it was very interesting that Chill Sound recently noted on his podcast with Jeff Jarrett that he thought Jerry Lawler was arguably the best heel in the business. So I want to know from you if you agree with that. And also, why hasn't your longtime partner, either Jerry Lawler, come on your podcast yet? And that's all I have.
Right now, WWE's not giving me any contracted people to be on my podcast. And for that, you'd have to ask them.
Welcome to my club.
And I haven't asked them, and I've got plenty of guests, so it's not an issue for me, yay or nay.
Exactly.
Secondly, Jerry Lawler, in my view, and his DVD came out yesterday, I think it was.
Yep, I got it in the mail yesterday.
I saw it. It's great. The documentary portion is great.
Great.
Strong
report to it.
Yes, you get it. It's really good. And the Memphis footage is priceless. Jerry Lawler's one of the top five, at worst 10, all-time great performers in the history of wrestling. As far as being a babyface, a heel, a booker, an announcer, a talker, a brawler, a scientific wrestler, whatever. He could have been the one. And if you want the manager in there when he had his leg broke, mm-hmm. he would fit there too. He made our team work. I give him all the credit for the success of the JR and King team. So that's how much I think of Jerry.
Jim, is this fair to say, if you're a huge fan of Jerry Lawler as a commentator at any point during the last 20 years of his run on Raw, 20 plus years, if you're a fan of his work on Raw, he was exponentially better before he was a color commentator. And that's not a dig at his commentary. He was so phenomenal on Memphis TV.
Watch him cut some heel promos and see what I'm saying.
Yep.
He's natural. He's organic, and he's not going to make you roll your eyes. He's like you just walk up to him and ask him, and he cuts a heel promo. He's great. He's not pretending to be something he's not.
Yep.
He's reciting what's in his head and not what he's memorized. And he's being himself. He's like all great characters. He's a natural extension of himself, and he is absolutely so gifted. And I was
what I loved about Jerry, too, Jim, is he didn't yell and scream a lot. Like it's something that I like about Kevin Owens, too. I think there's some similarities, despite some obvious differences, in that they are at ease. Jerry was always at ease when he was giving heel promos. I mean, every once in a while he'd lose his cool. But there was something about Jerry where he didn't need to yell and scream to get himself over as a face or a heel the vast majority of the time. That's one of the things I like about Kevin Owens. He's at ease and comfortable in his own skin in the role that he's playing.
You, or do you want people to listen? You want people to
listen.
That's the thing. And,
yes.
And we are all prone to not tune out screamers.
Yep.
In a grocery store or in the line at the bank or wherever, airport, boarding a plane, the screamers get tuned out and disregarded. But the ones that are making sense and make you listen. If a wrestler can make me listen, he's got me. If I just hear the noise, then he ain't got me.
Paul Heyman, greatest promo guy of the last several years, is at his best now compared to past eras, late 80s, 90s, 2000s, because he doesn't yell anymore.
Right.
And he used to be a yeller. He would froth at the mouth in ECW. And he was playing a different character in a different time, and I'm not questioning that editorial choice. I'm just saying Paul Heyman not yelling is much better than Paul Heyman yelling and frothing at the mouth. I mean, I think you can say that about a lot of guys. I hope Samoa Joe, we get the cool, Joe Cool version of Samoa Joe.
Just
the street tough.
Just yeah, don't put natural and enhance yep. your delivery a little bit, and people yep. will be fine. Don't
yeah.
recreate the wheel. Be what you are. And if what you are isn't good enough to be the main event at WrestleMania, then join the large crowd that it wasn't for them either. Just
yep.
be real and see what happens.
The last phone call we'll get to is 718. I apologize to other callers, but we've got to wrap this up. 718, please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hello, gentlemen. This is Mike from Brooklyn. How you doing?
Doing good. I, as I say, Mike, I always makes my day when I hear a strong Brooklyn accent. So welcome to the show again.
All right, thank you. Of yep. course, I'm very fortunate to be on with Mr. Jim Ross, you know, my favorite announcer of all time. First got exposed to you, you know, back in 87 with UWF. I want to ask two quick questions. I mean, how do you feel, you know, the upside of being that they announced the roster and few matches of, you know, Global Force? And also, are you enjoying the influx, you know, of new talent that's being added to Raw slowly, but, you know, slowly?
Yeah, I am. As long as they got a plan. I like it if they got a plan for them. If they don't have a plan for them, then they're wasting time. What was the other part of the question? The
Global Force Wrestling. We got a number of emails from people curious what you think about what's going on with their roster
curious.
Announcements.
I'm curious. You know, I haven't talked to Jeff in several days. I don't know where that's going to lead, if we're going to be able to do any business or not. It's a scheduling thing. It's a budgetary thing. But I'm going to help him promote it as best I can on my social media sites and things. I think he needs AJ Styles there. I think he needs all the Bullet Club guys. I think he needs some Nakamura and some Tanahashi. That's going to be his call. But the biggest thing he needs is a television network. And right now, to the best of my knowledge, that hasn't occurred.
Has it crossed your mind that TNA gets canceled in September in part because they feel like Global Force might be a better partner and they're going to switch to them?
I have no idea.
Okay. I'm just throwing it out there. People have mentioned that in emails.
I don't know. Destination America is the answer anyway, quite frankly.
I know. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's about all the time I got.
We got to a good number of callers. Jim, thank you so much. Your time is generous with us.
Okay.
And thank you. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you. Keep up the good work. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Jim. Appreciate it. Go ahead and check out Jim Ross. Just enter Jim Ross blog on Google, and you can go right to his blog. And obviously, he's got his podcast on Podcast One. You can find it in iTunes also. Thank you, everybody, for joining me today. Again, if you're not a VIP member, it's a great time to go VIP. There's so much going on in wrestling right now, and we have you covered from all angles, especially in audio these days. As I mentioned earlier, we added veteran MMA and pro wrestling analyst Todd Martin to the staff. His nearly two-hour shows, two 55-minute segments yesterday, went up yesterday for VIP members. Check out my Twitter feed. You don't even have to listen to what I'm saying. Really good response. At the Wade Keller, we have people on my Twitter feed praising Todd's debut, people who knew his work elsewhere and have heard him on so many other podcasts, or those who had never heard him before. Travis Bryant from the East Coast Cast messaged me on Facebook this morning saying he's already a big fan of Todd after hearing last night's show. He is a great addition to the staff, and we encourage you to go VIP. We've got, I've said before, and I meant it, an unmatched staff of longtime contributors to the site. Our staff and our volunteer contributors, in addition to the staff, are tremendous and unmatched. Todd Martin adding, I think, distancing us from any other group out there. And VIP is where we do our top-shelf work in audio and also columns and writing in the newsletter and on our ad-free website. The Bruce Mitchell Audio Show also went up last night. It was a busy day of audio. I recorded the Steve Austin Unleashed show for well over an hour, did nearly 2 hours with Todd Martin, and then did over an hour with Bruce Mitchell, in addition to my everyday Wade Keller hotline. So I did a ton of audio yesterday, and that is all available when you sign up to go VIP at pwtorch.com/goVIP. In addition to that, the latest Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter came out with my print reports with tons of analysis on Raw, SmackDown, Payback, and more, Also, in-depth reports on the ROH New Japan iPay-per-view over the weekend, full column from Greg Parks, staff roundtable reviews, multi-paragraph reviews, and scores for Payback from the Torch staff, so much more. Every week for 1,405 weeks dating back to 1987, the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter has documented wrestling history, broken stories, featured exclusive interviews, enhanced your knowledge through columns and in-depth features. And that comes with a VIP online membership, a PDF version of the newsletter, and an all-text version of the newsletter posted every week as part of a VIP membership. And VIP membership is only $10 a month or $99 for a full year. You can check out details and pricing at pwtorch.com/govip. Tomorrow, Bruce Mitchell and Travis Bryant right here at pwtorchlivecast.com. And don't forget the best, easiest, cheapest way to support PW Torch. If you are an Amazon.com shopper, start your shopping experience at pwtorch.com/Amazon. When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link. It takes you right to the homepage of Amazon.com, but we get a commission on any purchases you make. So profit that would go to Amazon goes to us, some of it, a small slice, but it's worth it. It's our tip jar. It's a way to say thanks and help keep us free, help keep us on the air, and help us grow our staff and continue to bring you the type of content that we do for free and also to our VIP members. So anytime you're going to Amazon, just start at pwtorch.com/Amazon, and you'll see the same products, same prices, same everything, but your orders lead to us getting a small commission that normally would stay with Amazon. So thank you, everybody who's already been doing that, and thank you for those of you who start doing that. Instead of Amazon.com, start shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon. Go ahead, if you haven't yet, check out my appearance on Steve Austin Unleashed. Go VIP at pwtorch.com/govip and set your phone alarm to remind you, 7 o'clock Eastern tomorrow, Friday. Bruce Mitchell and Travis Bryant round out a great week here at pwtorchlivecast.com with their live show discussing a lot of topics. And boy, has it been a fun week with Kevin Owens, Samoa Joe, TNA, Sami Zayn, Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch with a standout match on the NXT TakeOver special. So much to talk about. Check them out. They'll be on live, but you can also, if you can't join them live, listen on demand, as is the case with all of our shows. That does it for me for today. Thanks to our great callers for your support and your contributions to the program, as always. And on that note, Wade Keller, thanking you again and signing off. This is live.